in the night. Your heart fills with dread, probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed. You'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who?
Hello and welcome to Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It's Friday, June 7th. It's the very first Friday in June. Happy Pride to all our LGBTQIA listeners. We love you and we thank you for being here with us.
Happy Pride, everybody.
Hell yeah.
It's a hot one.
It's a hot Pride.
It's a hot Pride. Hot Pride summer.
Yeah, hopefully all your celebrations. The initial weekend went well, but like I said, we only hear on Sinistrode. It's like, what day is it? Well, we only know on Fridays what day it
Wednesdays
is.
Wednesdays and Fridays.
Pretty much.
Those are the only days that I know, okay, that's what today is.
It's for sure that day. No, yeah, thanks. Hopefully everybody's staying cool wherever you're at. Here, it has finally stopped raining, but that means, as Paris said, you know, the wetness is still out there. And yesterday he just came in and was like, I fell down when I ran again. I said, again?
Oh,
he goes, it's so slippery.
In mud.
Yes, uh-huh. He said, it's so slippery out there. I was like, you got to stop slipping in the mud. That's why I haven't been running. It hasn't been because I like to walk
same.
Around slowly.
Yeah.
It's because I don't want to eat shit on the sidewalk.
But for real, though, even it does get slippery. Like all that wash off from the people's yards and stuff on sidewalks and stuff. It is a slippery hazard.
He said it was a mud thing that he goes, it's been mud for so long, moss has grown on top of it. I'm like, So now it's like a booby trap that you think it's grass. Well, that's that's what happens whenever you're living in the very moist, damp, soggy ass Dallas that we're in right now.
Mosquito heaven is what I think it is right now.
I'm leaving town. I'll see you all later. I'm going to North Carolina, where, honestly, it might just be as hot.
I don't know that we're going to improve the hotness, but you know what? They've got gorgeous trees. Every time we go to North Carolina, we're like, the amount of lush greenery and trees here is – and we don't really have that here. Despite all the rain, it just – fucking floods. It didn't make gorgeous plants blossom.
No,
but
not
we
at
will
all.
Be in North Carolina in just a few days. I can't believe it's already here.
It sounds very stupid. I'm excited to go to Charlotte, North Carolina, primarily because when I was a kid growing up in the 90s, the Charlotte Hornets regalia became very popular and hip. And I know the Mavs are in like the NBA playoffs and I should be full on Mavs right now, but
you should.
I'm feeling what my goal when we go to Charlotte is to get like a throwback Hornets enamel pin. Hopefully I can find one because I've been getting enamel pins in all of our cities we're going to. So I'm on the hunt for that specifically. I think because it looks like the Mesquite Skeeters logo, which is our high school mascot. So that's why I was like,
are they
what's
purple?
Up, fellow? Charlotte Hornets is like, like teal and purple. The one I'm thinking of was, at least.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember there was a time in middle school where like all of a sudden everybody just started wearing starter jackets and jerseys from places that were nowhere from here. My best
sister.
Friend like had a Notre Dame starter jacket and it was so dope. None of us go to Notre Dame, but oh no, you know what? She may have had University of Miami. There was one where like, it was whatever college it was that she really liked at the time. But yeah, you don't have to go somewhere to support them. So Charlotte Hornets, there you go.
She had a Orlando Magic one that
there
I still
you go.
It was white with like blue. That starter jacket look is so clean. So maybe I'll get me a Charlotte Hornets one when we're in Charlotte on June 11th. And then we're going to Raleigh on June 12th for our full moon energy tour. And I'll tell you what, we're not the only ones who got full moon energy and full moon fever. I was at the rest in peace because they fucking closed all Alamo Draft House in Dallas.
It's
overnight.
A really sad day today. Literally, I might wear all black the rest of the day after learning of this news.
It was wild. So y'all have heard us talk about Alamo Draft House. All five of the Dallas locations, the franchise owner just closed them all overnight. And I was literally there last night watching Teen Witch with my husband. And it was fun. I said, the last movie we saw at Alamo was Teen Witch. I wonder how we're ever going to top that. And he was like, I don't think we can.
You can't. So, no, you went out on top with that
it
one.
Was, right, but it was crazy. Like, it was business as usual. We had so much fun. We ran into Chad Richards, who we do comedy with, and his wife, Ryan. Lovely to say hi to them.
So outside, there was no inkling that anything was going to happen.
No, everybody. It was all normal. And then we wake up this morning, everything's closed. This is why we can't lose movie theaters, because as we're sitting waiting to watch Teen Witch, I kept saying Teen Wolf, which ties in a little bit to Full Moon Energy, but Teen Witch, there is a movie coming out. Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum, they've got Full Moon Energy, because this movie called Fly Me to the Moon is coming out this summer, and it's about the behind-the-scenes marketing of the Apollo missions to try to get America on board, and also how much and to what extent they fake them behind the scenes with movie magic.
I did not know about this, and I'm super stoked. I can't believe I haven't seen the trailer, but they did say the casting agent was like, who are some of the sexiest people we can get to put in this movie?
Like, this is going to be about like the ins and outs of conspiracy. And honestly, that's why you and I are doing the Full Moon Energy Tour. They're like, who are the sexiest people that can deliver this information about the moon?
And then they said, well, we can't get Scarlett Johansson and Channing Tatum to do the tour. So instead, how about Christy and Heather?
Yes. And for the movie, they were like, can we get Christy and Heather to be in the movie? We can't call Scarlett and Channing. They'll do it. I was supposed to be Channing Tatum's part. You're supposed to be Scarlett Johansson's part.
Oh, that's very, but it's I don't know which one's better on. Honestly, but thank you.
I'm so strong. But yeah, so anyways, there Moon Fever is coming this summer. So if you want to know what the fuck we're talking about, we have the Full Moon Energy Tour. We're going around the country talking about the dark side of the moon. What is really happened on the Apollo missions? Are they going to lie to you in the ScarJo movie? We'll let you know, as well as all other kinds of mysterious, macabre, cryptid, crime, all of your favorite things, but all centered on the moon and all over the country, including Charlotte and Raleigh this coming week.
Yes, and then later we'll be going to Cincinnati, Cleveland, Toronto, Kansas City, Oklahoma City, San Diego, Phoenix, Las Vegas, and then ending it in October in Dallas. So for all details, including dates, times, venues, and more, visit sinisterhood.com/live shows. I think there's still tickets for some VIP spots, but those do go fast. And the VIP is so much fun. It's 45-minute post-show Q&A. You get a signed poster, and we just talk about whatever. You get, last time, somebody was like, what's the most unhinged cameo y'all have ever done? And we were like, one moment, and we pulled it up and just showed everyone right then. So you get to see behind-the-scenes stuff, too.
Yeah, the part of it, the fun, is the videos that we can show are like, pictures, behind the scenes stuff we can share. So the part of the Q&A is all about you, whatever you want to talk about. So when someone asked us on the last few legs in 2023, like, what happened with Pedal and y'all were moving, we're like, oh, do you want to see several videos of Heather and Tommy lifting Pedal into a van? And it was like, people were like, yeah, we want to see that. So stuff like that,
great.
Ask us. We'll pull it up. But I love the Q&A, and I am especially excited about our Dallas show, because blame it all on my roots, I'm gonna show up in Croots. And I'm going to ruin your full moon affair, because it's on a full moon. If I wear croots on a full moon, I'm going to open up a fucking portal.
Yeah, I think a portal gets opened. And
my jean vest cape is going to flap in the wind.
You turn into a bat.
Yeah, and I'm going to fly away.
You get to fly away. That's how you leave the stage that night. You get to fly away right down the aisle.
The Texas Theater's
through the
like,
doors.
Are you going to, you're going to bust a hole in the roof? Be like, we have insurance. They're like, no, you don't. You're like, you have insurance. Bye. Shit, I'm in the movie. Like, I can't bust holes in the movie theaters. There's not that many left in Dallas.
I hope you can fly me with you.
Yeah.
Or I'll get one of those things like in Mission Impossible that you like shoot up.
Like a grappling hook?
Yeah. And then I'll just go like and then belt. I'll release it and it'll just suck me right up through the hole that you've created.
Absolutely. Come up through the hole. You're welcome to climb on board. I'll be Falcor. You be Atreyu and Bastion and right on my back and I'll just fly, because if you don't know what we're talking about, I'm going to wear a full-ass wrestling outfit to the Dallas show. Anyway, we've talked about this way too long. I'll have Paris pull the video and we'll put it on YouTube so y'all can see it.
Oh, but that's a good idea.
I think my outfit is a good idea. I just need some help with the execution. So yeah. Calling all fashionistas, although my mom, she'll probably come through. You know how
she does. She'll be able to make you a jean duster?
Yeah, I want like
a denim
vest,
duster?
A denim vest that's like a duster too. So it's like, we got it.
So it's gonna be a buster. Lot of jean.
A buster. She's got on croots and a buster. She's ready to party. Baby's got her buster on. Down on the corner. She's got her croots. And what happens when she lets loose? She goes walking. Sorry, I'll stop singing such a really old country song parody and continue on.
I'll be wearing all black, so yeah, there's nothing exciting to see here.
You look great. You look great.
I can't. What am I going to wear? Something that isn't just like, I got to be like blend into the set so I don't take away from your shine. Like with, like on a puppet show, you know, like the puppeteers are all black so they're not really noticed.
Usually that's I'm the one with the puppet. Yeah, now the puppet master becomes the puppet. Oh, what a time, what a time. Well, we can't wait for that. I can't wait for our trip next week. I just like to travel with you. We like to hang out as much as possible. So if we can travel together, it's basically like we live together, which is our dream, I think, ultimately. Yep, I'm not trying to make your neighbors move.
Living next door to each other with a underground tunnel connecting us is our dream.
That's what we need. They're like, is that like, did you go in your closet? And it's like, don't worry about it. Did you guys dig holes under the houses? No, there's a bunker under here. You guys have just been hanging out in here. Yeah, there's a bunker with a smokestack. You didn't even notice there's smoke coming out of here.
This is, what was that lady on TikTok that everybody at first loved and then turned very quickly on her? Yeah, Tunnel Girl or whatever. Yeah, we're going to be the next Tunnel Girls.
We'll do it respectfully. Two girls, one tunnel.
Yeah, and we are going to shit in it, so that will stay the same.
Yeah, that tracks, absolutely. We've gotten unhinged. This week's episode's unhinged. This is unhinged. I'm feeling fun. I'm feeling loose, you guys. I'm glad to be here.
Oh, we're always glad to be here. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Lainey, and it is called The Friendly Neighborhood Murderer. Hey, y'all, I found your show through And That's Why We Drink, and it's easily become my go-to cleaning the apartment podcast. I especially love your Freaky Friday episodes. I work in Nashville for a small, private, Christian denomination-associated university. I also went there for undergrad less than 2 years after the following story occurred. It has its issues, but I love the community. However, small communities means everyone knows everything about everyone, the good, the bad, and the unthinkable. So here's my story about my closest brush with a murderer. Names of everyone except the convicted have been changed for privacy. My freshman year, one of my new friends from my residence hall started dating a boy in our class. Let's call him James. Before they were serious, James invited her to watch his mom tell her testimony. She watched online with some of our friends. Imagine our shock when the mom told this story. James's father, Richard Parker, or Mr. Richard, as everyone in the community knew him, was your typical church-going boy dad of four. Everyone knew him, and he even taught the teenage Sunday school group. He was, by all accounts, a pillar of the community. And then, he mailed a lamp to his in-laws using a fake return address that was rigged to explode when plugged in. He disguised a bomb as a lamp. Apparently, the bomb was meant for the father-in-law, but both in-laws were at home. The blast killed the father-in-law instantly, and the mother-in-law sustained injuries that led to her death a couple of days later at the hospital. Mr. Richard sat by her deathbed, comforting his son, who had gone into the burning house to save his grandparents. When the church's youth pastor came to be with the sons, Mr. Richard told the pastor, "I'm glad you're here for the boys. They're going to need you." He confessed just 2 days later, saying he did it to get out of repaying his in-laws a $40,000 debt. Over the years, I have seen how this crime has affected my community. Like y'all said in a recent Freaky Friday, crime doesn't just affect the victims and perpetrators. It ripples out to the families, friends, and community. Some of my close friends were in Mr. Richard's Sunday school class when the murders happened, and the trauma has affected each differently. One is terrified of death, like gets physically ill when she even thinks about it. Another has deep-seated trust issues. They all have PTSD, understandably. It's just wild to think that someone you interact with weekly, who you think you know, could do something so premeditated and violent. Mr. Richard was sentenced to life in prison without parole. On a happy note, James's mom got remarried to an amazing, caring man that loves her four boys so well. Her resiliency and strength are proof that you can do hard things, no matter what has happened to you. She inspires all of us to take what you need to heal so that you can continue to live a life full of light. This is truly I'm at a loss for words. Like, the planning that goes into this.
Yeah.
The premeditation is an understatement. Knowing mm-hmm. what you're doing and then sitting at the
bedside.
The bedside, knowing what you've done. And you also put your son's life at risk because sweet son ran in to save his grandparents.
Thinking
so
they
what
need help.
A traumatic thing for him. And then, especially when you find out what really happened, this man, all for $40,000, man.
You know what? I'm not going to say, you know, there's like three digits in my bank account. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not right. going to go, $40,000 is not a lot of money.
No, it's a lot of money.
It's a life-changing amount of money to me. But when you say, like, oh, would you trade my life for $40,000? Every single one of us would say, oh my God, no.
No.
You know, if you tell your in-laws, like, you guys, I just don't think we're going to be able to pay this back. And the options, you know, somebody's got to die for this. They'd go, oh my gosh, no, absolutely not. We love you. We lent it to you. Like, forget about it. You know, we can work it out. Things like that. Just the isolation that someone goes through. But honestly, the deception, because you have to deceive your wife, your in-laws, your own children, everyone in the church, while you concoct the idea, while you build the bomb, while you put it in the package, while you drive it to the post office. It just is so eerie to think of the other peripheral things he was doing in his life while he was hatching and then executing this scheme that ultimately killed not just, you know, it's not like, oh, I'm sending this anthrax out to strangers or to a government official. That's horrible, too. That's bad enough. But to someone who your spouse, it's her parents.
Yeah. And your kids' grandparents.
Yeah, your kids' grandparents. And like you said, your kids are in danger. But I can see how the people in the youth group would really be affected by this. Mm-hmm. No spoilers, but it makes me think of next week's episode of this kind of like church person who then you find out is this horrible monster. And you just go, well, what does that even say about my faith? Like, I was showing up here for this sense of community and we're all shaken. I want to quit church. And now some asshole has stolen what was an important part of your life from you.
It's all a permanent decision over a temporary problem.
Right.
And he deserves life in prison without parole. So that is what he got. And Lainey, I'm so sorry for you and everyone in your community. I'm especially sorry for the children that are involved and his ex-wife. Mm-hmm. Very glad to hear she found an amazing man that loves them all. But that doesn't erase what you went through and your loss as well. So, it's when you find out people that you revere as such, like, not even quote godly people, but just like good people, pillars of the community, like Lainey said, and then you find out they're capable, not just capable, but they executed the most heinous thing you can think of. You do question, like, everything you heard from that person. You know, your own relationship with them, with others. It is a huge ripple effect. And I'm glad that more people are like understanding that we can't forget about like all the other people that weren't maybe directly involved in this, but still suffered a lot of heartache and grief and trauma from it.
True. I mean, none of us are an island, and even our connections with our family aren't the only connections we have. So when you have somebody who does something heinous, whether you know them through work or school or the community or whatever, and you find out that they were capable of something horrible and then straight lied to you about it, you know, lied to everybody about it, made you think they were, you know, the soft, cuddly, like the boy dad, like, oh, he's like the coach. He's the fun guy. He'll come give you a ride. It definitely does shake your foundation. And I'm glad folks are, A, looking to his ex-wife, who that's resiliency is putting it mildly. I mean, that's huge to be able to come back from that. That is a lot of strength. And I'm glad she is an inspiration to everyone. And then just realizing this affected all of us. Like, I need to go see somebody about this. So, and not minimizing, going, well, I didn't really know him. It was kind of a friend's dad of a thing. It's like, no, if he was your Sunday school teacher, if he was your, you know, mentor or whatever, that happened to you too. And don't minimize that.
Something my therapist recently said to me, which I wrote down, which I feel is appropriate here. Trauma is anything that overwhelms our ability to cope.
Wow.
So you don't have to be, like you said, like an immediate family member to have been traumatized by something. And if anything overwhelms your ability to cope and function, mm-hmm. then, you know, seek out the help that you need for that. Like you said, don't feel like, well, my trauma isn't really like for real trauma. Like yeah. if it affects you, it affects you, you know?
Mm-hmm. For sure. And recognizing that and going, there's nothing wrong with it, but it's up to me to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Lainey, for sending that in.
Sinisterhood will be right back.
Well, this next one's from Jazz, and it's called I Crashed a Killer's Family Reunion. Hi, ladies. First, I want to say thank you for putting an amazing podcast out into the world. I feel like we'd be besties in real life. Christy, you constantly speak to my mama heart. I have a little boy and baby girl due in October, and I am taking all the notes from you on how to raise a confident daughter in this crazy world. Heather, I always say, I'm not a lawyer, I just play one on TV, because law was absolutely my missed calling. So I live for your legal insights and perspectives, and you both just crack me up. Well, Jazz, thank you so much for those very kind words.
Thank you.
Now let's get into it. I changed a few names to protect my family. In early 2015, on the heels of a devastating breakup with my now husband, right person, wrong time, I decided that I really needed to work on myself and spend more time with my family. So I made the move from California to the greater Cincinnati area, where my sister, Ashley, was attending college. Ashley and I are only 2 years apart, and we're besties, so we spent a lot of time together. She was dating her then-boyfriend, now-husband, Greg, at this time, who also went to college in the greater Cincinnati area and had graduated a few years prior. Greg had a large group of friends from his college days still in the area, and since I tagged along with Ashley and Greg often, I began to make friends with this group as well. Fast forward to June of that year, and one of Greg's close friends, Derek, invited us on his family reunion trip to Put-in Bay, Ohio. For context, the trip consisted of Derek's parents, his adult siblings, aunts, uncles, and adult cousins, aka the kids. The trip was being planned by the parents as a family reunion, but the two houses they rented were quite large, so they asked Derek if he'd like to bring some friends along. There ended up being space for myself, Greg, and Ashley, along with one other friend. We were the only ones not related to the family, but the trip sounded like fun. Ashley was going, and I was still new to the area trying to make friends, so how could I say no? Well, in late June of 2015, we make the journey through Ohio to the Put-in Bay area, only to be homebound the entire weekend due to a terrible storm. The ferries to the island were shut down, so we had a lot of downtime in the, quote, kids' house. There were a few people I hadn't met before that trip. One of them was Derek's cousin, Ray. I am using his real name. When I met Ray, I felt really uneasy, although I couldn't exactly place why. He rubbed me the wrong way and came off pretty arrogant. I quickly found out he was a police officer, because he didn't stop talking about it, and I figured he was just one of those guys that never had any authority in life, and then finally did. I had very few interactions with him, because I spent most of my time with Ashley, of course, and he just didn't seem like someone I wanted to become friends with in general. The weather didn't clear up until the day we left, so I never got to explore the area, but the entire group did make it out to dinner one night. Ashley and I made the most of the trip, and then we went on with life. That is until 3 weeks later, when I'm at work and a text from Ashley comes through. It read, "Did you see the news? Ray killed someone." I took to Google and there it was. Ray Tinzing, a University of Cincinnati police officer, fatally shot an unarmed man during an off-campus traffic stop. My heart sank. The next few months felt like a blur. My brain was trying to reconcile the fact that Ashley and I were staying under the same roof as someone that ended up recklessly killing a person just a few weeks later. It's likely you've heard of this case, since it was highly publicized from the clear-as-day body cam footage, and the fact that Ray walks free after two hung juries, but I'll link you to it for some extra context. In my research to fact-check my timelines before writing in, I found the Tinzing family email thread I was on, including a few pictures from the trip after everyone returned home. There's one from dinner, and Ashley and I are sitting across the table from Ray. The fact that my sister and I were in close proximity with an absolute monster makes me sick to this day, and it breaks my heart that justice was never truly served to Sam DuBose's family. Thank you for the safe space to share this story, even if it doesn't make it onto the pod. Hubs and I will be seeing you gals at your live show in San Diego in September. I'll be the super pregnant gal about to pop, but there's no way I'm missing you live this year. Sending you all the love and good vibes.
Well, thank you, Jazz, and congrats on the baby.
Yes, thank you.
But this case, I do remember this case, and thank you for the link to remind us. I had not seen about the hung juries and then later the failure to for the Department of Justice to pursue federal charges. But for those of you who don't know, it was a University of Cincinnati police officer doing an off-campus traffic stop for Mr. DuBose. Didn't have a front license plate. Guess who also doesn't? Me. Guess who's probably not going to get pulled over? Me. And who is? Sam DuBose, who was in his early 40s. He was a black man in the area. And Ray Tinzing, if you're like, oh, it was an absolute monster. Maybe it was an accident. He was wearing a Confederate flag shirt, it's my understanding.
Yeah,
under
which wasn't allowed to be entered into trial. He also, once they pulled all of his arrest, he had the highest arrest rate for people of color in his department. The discrepancy was wild. But yes, he pulled him over. Things went south very quickly. He claimed he was dragged under the car by Mr. DuBose putting the car into drive, trying to evade, and therefore he discharged his weapon and shot Mr. DuBose in the head, killing him instantly. Body cam footage, though, would say otherwise in the dash cam footage.
Yeah, the body cam footage. I mean, clearly he shot before the car moved. He was never once dragged. And to have him lie, overtly lie and say, oh, I was dragged. And then to have two other responding officers come and go, yeah, you were dragged. We did see that, man. That was crazy how that guy dragged you. What a monster. I'm happy that we have made the strides we have made from 2015 to present insofar as we're all a little bit, well, I say a little bit, I hope we're a lot more willing to scrutinize the behavior of police officers, especially when there is a racial discrepancy. And when you maybe have somebody who's out of their jurisdiction, and they said that the University of Cincinnati has since stopped doing off-campus police stops. Like, it's essentially like you're a university cop. Like, why are you pulling people over like far from where you should even be? I was heartened to hear, although it doesn't ever take away the loss of your loved one, that the DuBose family was provided a settlement by the University of Cincinnati for a few million dollars. Again, that does not ever take away, but you understand you have a member of your family that now can't help provide for their children. You have to have extra childcare.
You have 13 children.
Yes, you have to have counseling. You have to have, I mean, and then the university did say that all the children will be able to go to the university for no cost, which is the least they can do. And I thought, again, most heartening was they wanted to speak with the family about what policing tactics need to change. Like, what do you think need to happen? Because I'm always like, in situations like this, what does the victim's family want? That's the justice that we need to met out. Like, what are they looking for? Because I think, you know, we all look at it and go, oh, well, you know, they got a settlement. It's like, no, what else do you want? And it's like, we want real concrete changes. That's so no other families. Yeah. No other families go through that.
And I do believe that once it went to trial, on the stand, the fellow police officer said they never saw him dragged. They just showed up and they were told by him he was dragged. There was some testimony that said, oh, yeah, you can tell by his uniform he was dragged. And then the other testimony was like, no, that dirt got there after his gun was discharged. So, but it's wild that, yes, they took it to court, hung jury.
Twice.
Took it back to court, another hung jury. And at that point, the state said, I don't think we're going to be able to come to an agreement. We've had two juries that cannot reach even involuntary or first degree. Like it was just, and that's, I think, very telling when a police officer and a person of color is involved is how much work we still do have to come and how much further we do have to go because two juries heard this and still couldn't come to a guilty verdict.
Yeah, my legal opinion is that, he should not have had his weapon out. Like, it's one of those things where it's not like, well, I pulled him over after a high-speed chase because he had just kidnapped a child. It's like, you pulled somebody over for a traffic stop and they're going to speed off. That's irritating. Take their license plate down. You know what I mean? And he wasn't even speeding off because there was an argument of whether the acceleration was a result of a post-mortem reflex by Mr. DeBose's leg, which is a sad thing to even have to analyze. So, yeah, situations like this, it's very difficult to hear, like, oh, that person had a track record. That, like, of course he was going to pull over, you know, Sam was black. Of course he was going to pull him over for something minor, like a front license plate missing, and then to escalate it to such a position like this. And to have somebody's last horrible, violent moment sort of being, I won't say politicized, but it does get recorded. Politicized, you know, kind of by both sides. But I think the answer is simply, we all just want a safe place for everybody to live. And that's not on either side of any political aisle. It's just, I want people, trained people who don't panic and freak out and pull their guns out too soon. We talked about this in the Amber Geiger episode. I'm like, you got to be trained. You can't just go, oh, I heard a sound and I panicked and I shot. Okay, well, then you don't get to be a cop.
Well, not just training, but you also can't be racist.
Yeah,
you
bias know? Training. Yeah.
Yeah. I also want to say he was like 25.
He was super young. Yeah.
And the perpetrator, correct, which is just to be that young and already have a track record like that. And I mean, it even seems from Jazz's encounter, like you could tell there was something off about him. Mm-hmm. He seemed like an asshole. You know what I mean? So if he's like that on vacation, what's he like when he's got a badge and a gun?
True. And like she said, you know, that kind of that personality where, you know, I have friends that are cops that you wouldn't know because they don't walk up and go, well, I'm an officer. Yeah. They're just cool. And then you're like, what are you doing? And they're like, I'm a cop. And you're like, oh, cool. What kind? Yeah. Like, you know, where it's not like someone's going to come up and like flex their back. They're just like normal people who that's also their job. But then there's the guys like this who are like, well, as a police officer, I can tell you. And you're like, all right, deputy dumbass, like, shut up. We're not talking to you right now. So it does suck. And I think there are wide swaths of improvements to be made. I think we've made a lot of improvements in the last 10 years, but not done even remotely yet. But part of that is rooting out and saying, oh, it's not just like we kind of have some racist officers in some departments, but there are some departments where the Klan or neo-Nazi movements have taken hold. And that's a genuine concern. Like if there was any like, if it was like, well, they're all Freemasons, those police officers are all Freemasons first and then police officers second, get in there and break that up. I don't care what it is that they believe, but especially if it involves like, oh, they're more likely to kill people. We need to go in and break that up. That PBS Frontline documentary about just like this infiltration of the military and police departments by Nazi people who are basically trying to recruit folks. You know, it's not like, oh, they're all racist already. It's like, let's try to send some of our guys in to apply and then kind of float the idea and see if anybody wants to join. That kind of stuff's the kind of stuff that I think the Department of Justice needs to really investigate. And I think the FBI is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I'm glad that the university did what they could. Yeah, made good on some stuff. Of course, it does not bring him back, but I hope that it serves as a reminder that we still have a long way to go. And it's a good example of, yes, like you said, talking to the victims, involving the victim's family and like, what do you think needs to change? And opening up, you know, memorial funds or charities in their names and things like that. So their legacy is kept alive in a positive way.
Certainly. No, absolutely. I agree. And thank you very much for writing to us, Jazz, because I think we also wonder that, too, is that we see these people. And, you know, if you'd Google Ray Tenzing's name, it's just his mugshot and his, you know, it looks aggressive looking mugshot, but that's anybody's mugshot. But you wonder, like, well, what was that person kind of like? And, you know, this isn't a full picture of him, but it is fascinating. And especially that given his history. But
yeah,
thank you, Jazz.
Yes, thank you for sending that in.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, this next one is from Alex, and it is called Midday Stalker. Greetings and salutations, all. Love you, love what you do. Let's get into the story. It was a rare, nice, sunny, warm day this past May in Boston. I'm getting a PhD in biology, and at this point in the process, I had a lot of remote work, writing, data analysis, etc. When I would get cabin fever after working alone at home for too long, I'd walk to the coffee shop about a mile down the street and work there for a few hours. This particular day, I worked for a few hours in the morning at the cafe, then decided to head back home for lunch when I got hungry. As I begin my walk back, I clock a guy walking a distance behind me. I can't quite put my finger on what it was that made me notice him. He was dressed normally, acting normally enough.
I decided to do the thing that all of us women know to do. The casual move to the side of the sidewalk and slow down, pretending to check your phone or rummage in your bag, so that the man walks past you and now he's no longer behind you. So I do that, and he walks past me. I take a breath of relief, as so many of us do with this super normal occurrence. Just some guy, and he's doing his own thing. I'm just overly paranoid. I keep walking, and then he stops to fix his shoe, and I walk past. So now he's behind me again. Weird, but I shrug it off and just do the old routine of stopping for something again to get the guy not behind me. He finishes whatever he's doing and walks past me, then crosses the street and seems to be heading down another road, much to my relief. I keep walking, earbud in, probably listening to this very podcast. All of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see this man dart back across the street, way behind me, and tuck behind a building. My heart starts beating faster. Did that actually just happen? As I keep walking down the street, this guy is ducking behind buildings, cars, and doorways to stay out of my view. I'm the only other person out on the street. He is absolutely following me and doesn't want me to see. My stomach drops out from under me. This guy is actually following me. He doesn't realize I saw him, so I decide to use that to my advantage. I leave my earbuds in, but I turn them off so I can hear better. I grab my keys and put them between my knuckles in my pocket. He continues following me down the street, ducking behind things, and now I know for sure this is not in my head. The hiding and moving like a soldier is so sinister, I have chills covering my entire body. I can't go to my apartment alone, so I keep walking towards a string of stores down the street. I see one store that has another person in it, and duck into there quickly. I take a breath and walk farther into the store. Then the bell rings. The man has followed me into the store. It ends up being a tennis store, and I pretend to look around at things, keeping a clothing rack or shelf between him and I at all times. Who I assume must be the manager or owner comes out of the back and greets us both. The man says nothing, and I must look scared because the owner keeps looking at me, concerned. I mouth to him, "He's following me," and glance to the guy, who is staring at me with this animalistic intensity, like when a lion looks at a gazelle before it attacks. The owner nods and pretends to fiddle with things on the shelf just to keep an eye on us both. At this point, I pretend to look at something on my phone and instead take a video of the guy quickly. I'm not very good at being sneaky, though, because he snaps his head to me and asks in an angry, almost panicked voice, "Did you just take my picture?" I give my most convincing attempt at confusion and respond, "What? No." His tone shifts to one of contempt. "I saw you take a picture of me. Delete it now." I deny again and keep walking farther away from him. But now he steps out from the aisle and starts to walk quickly towards me. I instinctively move closer to the store owner and take my fist out of my pocket with the keys, ready to fight. He either doesn't notice or doesn't care because he comes closer and says, "Hey, you're cute. Can I have your number?" I fight every urge in my body to yell at him to get the fuck out of my face because, as women, we still have to be polite to try to keep ourselves safe. Instead, I very sternly and firmly say, "I have a boyfriend. I am not interested. Please leave." He smirks and continues to try to convince me to give him my number. He asks how old I am and what I'm doing in a tennis store. I stop responding, but I don't break eye contact with him. I felt like I was dealing with a wild animal or something, where the first one to break eye contact admits submission. Not me. My dad once said, "People say there's fight or flight, and you are a flightless bird." I'm buzzing with energy, ready to punch this guy in the face if he takes one more step towards me. Then he says something that makes my blood run ice cold. He points across the street and asks, "Are you working tonight again?" Across the street is the Italian restaurant I waitress at to put myself through grad school. I work most weeknights there. I had never seen this guy before, I'm sure of it, but he sure knew where I worked, and when, too, since I had just worked last night. Every hair on my body stands on end as I wonder, How does he know that? Has he been watching me before this incident today? I stand staring at him, not responding. He is smiling ear to ear, enjoying himself thoroughly. The store owner finally walks over next to me and stares back at the man. No words are exchanged, but the man laughs and leaves the store. I watch him walk out and duck behind the building. I call my friend, whose fiance is a cop a town over, and they come and pick me up. They take a report and check around my house before I go in. They never did find the guy. I just can't stop wondering. Was he watching me before? Is he still watching me? Do I have a stalker? Why didn't he want me to have a picture of his face? And what was he planning on doing if I didn't go into the store and see him?
Oh, Alex, you, I'm so sorry. You should not have to endure this ever. But especially you think in broad daylight that someone is that bold to just literally follow you and to the point to follow you into the store, and you're clearly nervous and like trying to get away from him. Take the hit, man, and leave. But it's not what they're there for. He was there to show you he knew where you worked.
Yeah, this is every woman especially, but anybody's, I think, would be scared in this situation. But especially women, this is, and we all do know, the step to the side, pretend like you're doing something so they can get in front of you, move. He knew it too.
Mm-hmm,
he stopped to tie his shoe. And then certainly adds an extra layer of fear when he says, "Are you working tonight again?"
And point.
Because it does tell you that he has at least seen you before. But to know you were working there last night, I mean, he had to have been around somewhere. And if it wasn't in the restaurant because you didn't see him, then where was he? I hate that he wasn't found. And I hope that nothing else has happened like this.
No, I agree. I'm glad you were trying to take a video or a picture, take a picture of his face. He can't tell you to delete shit because he's in public, so he has no expectation of privacy. But I hear you. You know, you kind of don't want to go, "I'll take a picture of anything I goddamn want to, or I'm going to hit you in the face with this tennis racket," because you don't know if he's like, okay, and then he just goes and waits outside your house to do something horrible, you know, and sneak. So you kind of think like, okay, I have to balance while I'm here. Like, it really is this kind of balancing act of your own safety versus I have a right to stand up for myself, but also I know that this is a vicious person who's willing to follow me down the street and follow in front of this tennis store worker. Again, it's one of those where you think, oh, there's another person around, they're going to get freaked out and leave, but they were just so bold. I feel like attackers are getting bolder anecdotally. One of my favorite places to go is White Rock Lake, and actually I have a t-shirt on of White Rock Lakes.
happened to,
but I believe it was yesterday, and a woman at noon was running and was grabbed and assaulted at the lake.
There's been a couple of things happening at the lake over the past month, several crimes.
And then someone tried to snatch a Lowe's worker while she was working at Lowe's in broad daylight in the middle of her shift. It wasn't here, but it's this security cam footage of a person just kind of grabbing this lady and trying to run out of the store with her. And of course, she's like hanging on to merchandise. Mm-mm. So it is all that to say, I'm going to call out this tennis store owner who should have done a little bit more, in my opinion. If you see a woman wandering around your store going, "He's following me."
Yeah.
The second walk up, go, "Hi, sir. Hi. What kind of tennis do you play? Are you a pro at a shop? What are you looking to do today? Maybe we can help you." I mean, you can do from that Right to Be organization, which we talked about in the Kitty Genovese episode. It's like righttobe.org. They do training on how you can not go, "Let me mediate this between you, sir, lady. Do you know each other?" Where you don't make it a big deal, but you kind of can utilize your position as a customer service person to maybe give this lady a second to get out. If you're like, "Okay, I got you." And just go over and go, "Hey, sir, I want to sign you up for our customer program. Actually, I want to give you, let's put these tennis shoes on you." Whatever you can do to distract him and get him away so she can leave safely. Or say, "Hey, ma'am, oh, are you Brenda? Are you here for that job interview? Let's go back into my office and get, sir, I'm so sorry, I can't help you. I actually have to conduct a job interview. Thank you so much." Whatever it is. But I think you, what sticks out to me is that, Alex, you did nothing wrong whatsoever. The bad guy did everything wrong. But I want to say to the shop owners of the world, who we've all been in that position where we're like, "Something going on here." If somebody looks at you and is like, "I'm being followed," there's nothing wrong with casually being like, "Oh my God, what, did you go to Mesquite High School? I went to Mesquite High School. I haven't seen you in 20 years. Whatever. Just something to get them away from that person. And if you need training or help on how to do that, that Right to Be organization is really good for that. Because I think we all got to be each other's keepers.
And also, just like you said, saying something to him, at least mm-hmm. he now knows, oh, I've been clocked. Yeah. Like this, you know, I mean, he obviously knew his face was being seen by her, but now mm-hmm. you've got a second person. But yeah, I agree. There could have been more done on the shop owner's part for sure. And the fact that this just happened this past May is a little shocking, honestly, that the shop owner didn't do something more. But
yeah,
again, we got some work to do. So, but now maybe you're a shop owner and you're hearing this, and next time you'll be like, oh, I know what to do now because I've heard a story very similar to this.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Alex, for being willing to share this. And mm-hmm. Like I said, you did nothing wrong. You did, in fact, everything right, you know, trying to avoid all that good stuff. And so good luck with grad school. And
yeah.
May you never see that guy again. I hope that he got dumped into the Boston Harbor like all the tea.
Yes. I hope that guy does not see anyone in any kind of scary or harmful capacity ever again.
No. Thank you, Alex. Well, this next one is from my daughter, Anonymous. Hello, darling. And the subject line is, how I ended up in a developing nation with a cult. The spring of my junior year of college was a rough one. I'd gone through a terrible breakup with an asshole guy, my birth father had decided to move to another country, and as most 22-year-olds, I was on a mission to figure out my place in the world. I had several different groups of friends in college that didn't really overlap. But because I was in many different activities and had an outgoing personality, I enjoyed getting to know people in different circles. Unfortunately, because these circles didn't overlap, my close group of friends wasn't able to warn me about the people involved in this story. One of these groups was an odd mix of people from different majors and different areas of the state. I wasn't sure how they all came to be a group, but they all seemed nice, so I didn't question it. Famous last words. As I mentioned, I was in the aftermath of a bad breakup and trying to find myself. So when the offer came to join some of them on a mission trip to Haiti, I thought, wow, these people are so kind and brave. I'd love to join. I thought it would be a great opportunity to travel, meet new people, and help a community rebuild. This was still in the aftermath of the earthquake in 2010. So I signed up, and 3 months later, I was on a plane to Haiti. I arrived at the airport with three people from my college friend group, and we met up with about seven other people from across the country. Again, I wasn't sure how these people all knew each other, but everyone was very nice, so they were fine, right? My first, oh shit, moment came when we were on the four-hour van ride into the mountains to the village where we were staying. The sinking feeling started to hit when I realized just how far into the mountains I was going with a group of people I didn't really know, with very little ability to contact anyone back home. This was during iPhone times, but there's no 4G in Haiti, and the government cuts power whenever they feel like it, so there's only Wi-Fi about 4 hours a day, if you're lucky, to message anyone back home. But no turning back now. The first day was relatively uneventful. We spent lots of time with the kiddos at the orphanage, playing games and drawing pictures. The second day, however, brought more red flags. After a day of working to hand dig a well, a few of our group members ended up sick and in the hospital. Two things to note. They were sick because we were digging a well next to open sewage, and the, quote, hospital consisted of penicillin and a saline drip. The rest of our group went to visit them in the hospital. After walking back to the hostel afterwards, we met up for a group chat to discuss our next steps since we had a few less group members to help out. During this time, our group decided to pray. No big deal. I'm Christian, so this didn't strike me as unusual, especially since several people were sick. During the prayer, however, the man leading our group started talking about physically casting out the devil and encouraged us all to chant together to try to cast the devil from our midst. At this point, I started to side-eye everyone. As I looked up, everyone else seemed to be following along with what was happening, and I just watched as a realization washed over me. I had no idea who any of these people were. The next day, we were supposed to continue digging the well. After the night before, I decided to stay back from the group and take a minute to regroup with myself. I decided there was nothing I could do about my situation for the next 5 days, so I would do my best to stick it out. That evening, I met back up with the group. I listened to everyone else talk about what they had done that day and the thing they had done to help out others. Okay, great, I thought. Back on track with what we came here to do. Until I heard one girl speak up and say that the Holy Spirit had filled her that day and that she had started speaking in tongues and went on to talk about this experience. Oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit. Well, that was the biggest red flag for me. At that point, I was just thinking to myself, okay, just have to make it through 4 more days and get home safely. After this, someone started talking about how prevalent the practice of voodoo was and how that, quote, brought all the demons into the area. At this point, I pretty much zoned out. For the next 4 days, I tried to help as much as possible, but also lay low and not really talk to anyone. By the 8th day of the trip, we were ready to load the flight back home. At this point, I didn't feel like I could trust anyone in the group, so I tried my best to keep to myself. After landing back in the States, we still had a good 7-hour drive home, so we stayed the night in a hotel and planned to leave early the next morning. Unfortunately, this is where the story takes a turn. And for our listeners, this takes a turn into bodily fluid, so you can mash that skip button if you have an issue with that. Anonymous writes, about 1 a.m., I woke up vomiting blood. And ladies, I'm not kidding when I say blood was coming out of every orifice. I was puking until 7 a.m. when everyone else got up. At this point, I just wanted to get home. We decided to drive as far as we could. Thankfully, I was able to call my mom, and she drove 5 hours to pick me up and take me to a hospital in our home state. My mom is the best. After about 5 hours in the hospital, more puking and blood, we found out I had some kind of a parasite, most likely from contaminated water. It took 2 weeks of strong antibiotics, but I was finally able to get back to normal after learning several valuable lessons. And that's how I ended up in a developing nation with a cult, or at the very least, a cult-like group. One of the stupidest things I've done, second only to hitchhiking in the middle of nowhere, Oklahoma. Thank you so much for all you do. You ladies are the best. Keep it creepy.
Well,
what an adventure.
Anonymous.
Well, first of all, your mom is the best because it's me. Just kidding. Your real mom is the best. 5 hours is incredible. Oh, yeah. Sweet mother.
You got to do it. Yeah, that is. So one thing that I want to say here is if you feel like, man, I don't want to be here. Something weird's going on. But I'm all the way in Haiti and I just got to stick it out, make it 4 days and stay safe. Just fucking bounce, man. You know, I mean, like, yeah, if that's because your gut's telling you, like, I mean, if you know, call your mom, be like, yeah, I want to come home, change your flight. If you can do something, because there's a lot of signs and it's to have that happen, like in an area where you're comfortable is scary, but to be in a completely different country, thousands of miles away from anything you know, is super scary and also dangerous.
No, truly. And especially if you're with the group that you, initially you're like, oh, wow, they're so brave and so kind. And then you don't realize like, oh, they're kind of like white saviors. And it's sort of like, yeah, disdain for the locals to go, well, you know, they're all into voodoo. That's why we're, yeah, here. And then it's like, yikes. I came here to be kind and to help people, not to say fucking terrible things like that. Yeah. But I was reading over the stories before we came to record, and I told Paris, I was like, oh yeah, one of these. And I kind of summarized what happened here. And he said, well, it happens to the best of us. I remembered that he had joined a church after college. And then that was the church that very quickly they were like, we need you. You're a male elder of the church. We need you to come in here. And then he was like, then they had us all stand in a circle and was like, we're all going to speak in tongues over this person because what? We think there's a devil.
I didn't know this story.
I know, he needs to write it into a Freaky Friday. But I was like, he goes, so let's not judge, because sometimes you're just in a church and all of a sudden they're like, yeah, so anyways, the devil's in me to cast me out. And you're like, oh, well, I thought this
just
was a normal place.
Just get sprung on you.
Yeah, yikes. You're like, I just thought this was kind of run-of-the-mill Christian community. We love each other and not like one of those. So don't feel bad, Anonymous. Your father went through the same thing.
Yeah, that's I'm glad that you overcame such a, I'm not going to go into it again because we already gave the content warning, but that's horrible. And, you know, when you dig a well and then you're also asking the people of Haiti to then drink well water that is right next to sewage,
Yeah.
That's not good for anybody.
Right. Then you kind of ask yourself, like, okay, well, I've gone with this group. Is it a group? And of course, you did nothing wrong, Anonymous, because you're in college.
It sounds
you
think like whoever like, set this up.
Yeah, right. Then you're like, well, I went with this group and they set it up. And is it actually making things worse for the people that I'm mm-hmm. going to visit versus making them better? But Paris also was like, Haiti, the reason why they're so impoverished, I believe they're the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, largely because they had to pay reparations back to France because they ceased doing slavery in like the late 1700s. Wow. So he was like, look what, you know, Haiti was punished essentially for being, you know, pro-human rights. And then, yeah. of course, all the earthquakes and the horrible natural disasters. But you do wonder, you know, when we go over there, you hope that it is a vetted organization that is positively impacting the, not like, oh, then those Americans came, they dug that fucking well and we all got sick from it, you know, yeah. and then they were speaking in tongues and making fun of our religion. And it's like, mm-hmm. everybody just do the religion you want
to
do.
Go
and
don't go back push it to the United States. Yeah. We don't need you here.
Don't push it on them or, yeah, come there without an agenda. But it sounds like yeah. you did the best you could when you're just like, well, I'm going to white knuckle this until I get home.
Yeah. Yeah. And good on your mom for being like, I'm on my way.
Yeah, I got you, baby. To.
Good mom. Job, Heather. Yeah.
Sweet mom. No, I was saying, but like your mom saying like, oh, 5 hours is nothing. I'll come get you. Like that's yeah, such a good no, mom. She's real. A sweetheart for sure. Well, thank you, Anonymous. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This next one is from Simone, and the subject line is, tell me, was I visited by aliens? Hello to the two voices in my head. I love y'all, and you already know how great you are. Hair toss. Here's a story for you. I'd love to hear your thoughts because I still don't know where I stand on what I experienced in a New Mexico desert back in 2020. When I moved from my home state of Kentucky to Arizona in the fall of 2019, I, like the rest of us, had no idea what a shit show 2020 would be. I didn't know a soul this side of the Mississippi River. The pandemic swept through the United States, and the mountains around where I lived were literally on fire that summer, which was one of the hottest on record for the region. It was brutal. But being an outdoorsy type, I decided this was my chance to explore some of the deserts around my new home. Coming from the rolling bluegrass hills and lazy rivers of Kentucky, this was a whole new landscape to me, and I was keen on learning from it. In the middle of the summer, I took a 6-hour drive northeast to a pretty unpopulated area of New Mexico to go solo camping. Now, a lot of people get on me about camping by myself, especially as a Black woman. I understand the dangers, but there ain't no way I'm going to let fear and assholes keep me from living my life. So I did the smart things. I let people know where I was going, even though they all lived out of state, and gave them a window of time to expect a message from me letting them know I'd return home safely. I brought my knife and my bear spray, even though it's definitely more for keeping men away than bears. Don't even get me started. And I drove the 6 hours up to where I planned to camp in New Mexico. I chose this location because it's dispersed camping, meaning you don't have to pay or reserve the site. And because, this is important, it is a designated dark sky sanctuary, meaning it's so remote that there's no light pollution blocking out the stars at night. There were no buildings with light fixtures, no street lights, no nothing. When the sun went down, it was dark enough for the stars and the moon to light up the sky. That night, the moon was going to be full, which is not great for stargazing, but I was still looking forward to seeing the purple-orange arm of the Milky Way stretch across the blue-black sky speckled with gleaming pinprick stars. The site was isolated and quiet, high up on a scrubby plateau without a person or structure in sight for miles. That is, except for some unspecified number of cows roaming the area. Even if you can't see them, you can always hear the hollow, lazy dong, dong of cowbells echoing across the plateau. So, I set up camp, cooked dinner, Kraft mac and cheese, baby, and cracked open my beer and my book to enjoy the last light of the day before a beautiful sunset spilled across the western sky. I stayed up for a few more hours, enjoying the moonlight and the company of the stars. That night, because it was hot and I wanted to sleep under the stars, I didn't cover my tent with the rain fly. This meant I could look right out the mesh tent to see the sky. By a little after midnight, I crawled into the sleeping bag in my tent and drifted off to sleep. This is when shit got weird, y'all. I woke up to go pee sometime around 3 a.m. I know the time because I checked my phone. The moon was bright enough that I didn't really need my headlamp at all. When I got back to my tent, I started to drift off to sleep until I was awoken by a bright-ass spotlight shining down into my tent from above. There was no sound, just a white light illuminating everything around me. Half awake, I thought for a moment it was the moon shining down at just the right angle. But when I tried to roll over to hide my face, I shit you not, I couldn't move my body. Ooh, this is making me all sweaty and jittery just thinking about it again. I couldn't turn my head. I couldn't speak. I was paralyzed. The light seemed to pulsate slowly, growing in intensity to the point where I felt it would blind me, and then dimmed slightly so I could see the walls of my tent out of my periphery. It was such an eerie, unnatural, sterile white light. There was no noise from outside. There was no wind rustling my tent or the scrub brush around me. No sound of hollow cowbells in the distance. Until something started shaking my tent from outside. Lord, I wanted to scream. My whole body was screaming to get up, to get out, to run, to do something. But I couldn't move an inch. Couldn't make a sound as my tent shook violently around me. I couldn't tell you how long this went on for. Eventually, the tent quieted down and the light dimmed slightly, casting sinister shadows all around me and all around the outside of the tent, which I could see only through my peripheral vision. Though the light stood still, I sensed the shadows moving, but tried my damnedest not to notice, not to see it. It must have been the wind tussling through the scrub brush, or maybe a cow that wandered too close, right? I tried to convince myself of this, but it was so quiet and the shadows were so close. There was no way I would have heard something. The silence persisted, and so did the movement of the shadows. I must have fallen asleep because suddenly everything went blank. Next thing I knew, it was full-on late morning with the sun blazing overhead. I must have fallen asleep, right? Somehow I missed sunrise because when I looked at my phone again, it was 10 a.m. The sun was set to rise at 5:30 that morning, and I had planned on getting up with the sun to do a quick hike nearby. I didn't bother setting an alarm because the sun is so bright here in the morning, and the temperature starts to rise immediately. It was already in the mid-90s, and I was overheating bad, drenched with sweat in my sleeping bag. I raced out of my tent, heart pounding, and looked around. Nothing seemed to have changed. The only strange thing, which I still don't like to think about to this day, was that the ground looked like it had been swept clean, if that makes sense. I didn't see any of my footprints from the night before, nor the spot near my campfire where I'd been sitting, nor were the tire tracks behind my car from where I drove in. The ground all around my campsite looked as though it hadn't been disturbed at all. Let me tell you, I got out of there so fast, I drove straight back home as fast as I could. I'm a scientist and very ecologically minded person. I do believe extraterrestrial life exists, but the chances of their having come to Earth is not something I'd ever be quick to believe. I know the History Channel would have us believing otherwise. I could go on for days about how ancient aliens is just about discrediting pre-colonial cultures of black and brown people because, of course, Africans could never have built the pyramids, right? Sheesh. For a while, when I told this story, I chalked it up to good old sleep paralysis. But maybe it was aliens. I don't know. What do y'all think? Anyway, I'm now living in Seattle, Washington. I am friends with an elder from an Indian nation on the Olympic Peninsula, and I've always been told that the Sasquatch is a protector of the forests. So, if you want to go squatching with me out in the woods and learn more about the lore from an indigenous perspective, come through. Maybe something else strange will happen to us out there in the old growth forests of the Pacific Northwest. Love, peace, and rest to y'all. Simone. First of all, yes, we will go there and we will
hang
out.
I'll go squatching.
Let's go squatch together. I'm in.
I'm always down to squatch.
I'm in. First of all, I love the way you write. You're a phenomenal writer.
Yeah,
and
very,
I felt like I was
writer,
there.
Great writer. I will agree. And I will around. Also agree that I think an alien may have visited you.
Not because we recently watched like the very early episode of South Park where the aliens come, but it's like that like I think they make fun of it on like TV shows and stuff like that because that is so frequently what people report is like seeing a white light, not being able to move. Maybe they were just like, that's well, we're used to seeing a bunch of cows grazing. What's that little dome over there? Or like, oh, a dome. That means there's a human in it. Let's go look at the human.
I would go sleep paralysis if it weren't for the ground being swept clean and everything.
Yeah.
The next morning. And unless it was
really windy, but you said there was no sound. So, because I was thinking, well, if it's windy, that could shake the tent and also
make it,
you know, blow the dirt around and stuff. But if there was no sound and you couldn't hear anything rustling, then that doesn't really hold up.
No, huh? When you're in a tent and it's windy, it's the most obnoxious sound. Brrr, oh, just yeah. like such an annoying sound. So to have it like be moving and silent is so eerie. And especially that feeling of, oh, damn, the moon must be in my eyes. And then it's like, oh, that's not the moon. Yeah. Oh, no, that's not the moon.
Dude.
Oh, I love, but shout out for solo camping. Like, I love to go solo hiking. Like you say, you don't want to have, as we recently said in the last story, you know, there are people out there, but I'm not going to not go to my favorite lake because there are predators around. You bring your spray, my laser guided mace, my birdie personal alarm to make a lot of noise out in the desert. That's not going to do you a whole lot of good. Maybe get the cows running at you. I don't know. But something, you know, that type of tire thumper I keep in my car.
I was going to say, you have your stick, too.
My big old stick. It's my walking, my beating stick. But, you know, you still, like you said, you take the precautions, tell people where you're going. When I got caught in the lightning on Saturday, I texted you and Paris and Tommy of like, I'm here just in case, because I was very far out by myself. My car was the only one in this nature trail parking lot. And I was like, I should be responsible. Like, Christy has my location, but she might be like, oh, maybe she's out there with a friend. So I had to be like, I am here alone, just FYI. So I appreciate you doing the same thing, Simone, letting people know where you're at.
Yeah. I also want to throw another theory out there.
What's your theory?
What? Well, I've talked before about my theory about why I think aliens need cows. Because they live milk. At the bottom of the ocean and therefore have a vitamin D deficiency. And so they need the milk from the cows. Well, there's cows roaming all around this area. So maybe this was an area where they normally go and get some of their milk. And somebody happened to be there that night and they were just checking it out.
They were like, is this a threat? Ah, no, it's just a human sleeping. Let's go get our milk. Oh, sucky, sucky. I'm ready. But Gim, let me pinch the udders. Don't pinch them so hard. It hurts them. They like it. You don't know that they like it. I hear the dong dong. That's not what I'm trying to suck. It's the udder. Yeah, things got crazy with those aliens really quickly.
Yeah, it did. It went downhill fast. But we're very glad you, Simone, were unscathed.
Truly.
And you have quite a tell now to tell. So I don't know. I know that I would be scared shitless. I would have been scared shitless to be out there so by scared. Myself and have all of this happen. So you are very brave to even have embarked upon a journey like this on your own.
I love it. I thought, especially when it was like the sun is setting and you like crack a beer in your bunk.
Oh,
and
sounds
I was like,
great.
Oh, that sounds amazing. If I ever went solo camping, I would take Buffy with me because I'm a big baby. But also then I'd have to keep her on a leash because she would see the first squirrel of raccoon and run away. And she's
gone.
She'd
be out with those cows chasing a cow across the prairie.
And she's gone. Okay. Well, that took 1 second. But that's, I appreciate the offer to take a squatch in the Pacific Northwest with your friend. I'm in. I've been wanting to. Paris and I drove down Oregon. It was so pretty. And one of our kind of issues with there were so many beautiful things in such a close drive that we like couldn't drive south to Crater Lake and then also north to like all of the Washington State beautiful parks and stuff up there. Mm-hmm. So we have to get up there and we'll have to holler at you and go squatching for real.
Squatch it up.
Sinisterhood will be right back. Well, this last one is from Mary Catherine, and the subject line is, "You helped me save my wedding dress and my sanity." Heather and Christy, I already loved you before this encounter, but I love you so much more now. I've been binging your podcast ever since you had a collab episode with Two Girls, One Ghost. It's to the point I listen to you talk to help me fall asleep at night since your voices are soothing and you make me feel like you're my cool aunts that are into the same things I am. Let's get into this wacky experience that could have ended so differently. I'm getting married this September in Ireland. I have a very long and very Irish name, both parents from Chicago's Southside Irish Catholic families. I studied abroad in Dublin in college, and now, here I am, 6 years since meeting my fiancé and 3 months out from getting married in my favorite place in the world. I bought my wedding dress months ago and received it maybe 2 months ago. Me being me, stressed out and anxious, I waited to order shoes and get my dress altered. The bridal salon I went to was far from Chicago, where I live, and so was their recommendation for a tailor. I told my mom, who has graciously paid for my dress, veil, accessories, and offered to pay for my alterations. Let's find someone else. We both thought the woman who altered my prom dress 11 years ago would be able to do it, but we couldn't get in touch. My mom then found a tailor with good Google reviews near my parents' house and made us an appointment. We met there and walked in, and it immediately felt off. The photos online did not match the shop, and the woman, who I assumed owned it, was cold and just weird. My mother brought her mother of the bride dress as well to get hemmed and taken in. We both went into the respective changing rooms and changed into our dresses. I went first, and the shopwoman was either pushing me to do things I didn't need or want, or was disagreeing with what I wanted done. All I needed was to hem the dress, take in the chest, small titties, and close a very high slit, since I don't need everyone seeing my lady bits. After she pinned both mine and my mom's dresses, we changed back into our clothes. While waiting for my mom, I had such a deep gut feeling that this was off and felt wrong. I thought about going into my mom's changing room and telling her, but I decided against it. Big mistake. We get up to the counter, and for minimal work, $1,450 for both our dresses. Astronomical. That's like half the cost of the dress. My mom asked if she could pay half now, and the woman refused. My mom reluctantly paid in full, and we left. Since we drove separately, we headed to do some shopping before a lunch reservation. I drove the 10 minutes feeling so off. I don't know why, but I didn't like the feeling this woman gave, and hello, it was my wedding dress. I'm not a bridezilla, I promise. Everything else with wedding planning has felt right and good, and I've left happy and excited. This tailor was the exception. I looked up reviews of the shop while I was driving. I normally don't do that, but there were a lot of mixed reviews. On Google, she had 4.8 stars, but I noticed any bad reviews she had, she would actually argue in the shop's page and say that the person writing the review was lying. There was one from a week prior that said a woman was overcharged and that the tailor had completely ruined her wedding dress. And then I looked at Yelp. She had 1.4 stars. All terrible reviews, saying that they were scammed and that she had ruined a lot of wedding dresses. Once I met back up with my mom, I told her immediately that store and that woman were not good vibes. I had a friend whose wedding I was just at. She had had her dress ruined and had to buy a new dress 2 weeks before her wedding. No, not the same tailor. I did not want to have that situation. My mom agreed and said she felt completely off as well and didn't trust the woman either. We agreed to go back to the store, not calling first, to see if we could cancel the alteration and get our dresses back. My mom said she had a feeling this wasn't going to go down well, and she was right. I asked to stay in the car since I can talk mad shit, but confrontation is my nightmare. We both walked back into the store, and the owner was definitely surprised to see us. My mom told her she thought it was just too expensive and we'd like to cancel the alterations and take our dresses. The woman said, no, that wasn't possible. Also, as a side note here, my mother is 5'1", works at a grade school, and is known by my family as St. Susan. When the owner started to confront my mother and say this wasn't going to happen, something flipped in her. We could see our dresses hanging on a rack 5 feet from the door, and my mom walked over to grab them off the rack. The woman stood in front of my mother, refused to let her get the dresses off the rack, and started pushing her back. Then I called the police, since this woman was not going to let us take our dresses back. I called 911, and the dispatcher was so sweet and helpful. She could clearly tell that I was flustered and didn't have the right address for the place. She was super sweet and totally kept me calm. The police officer arrived minutes later, but it felt like an eternity. I explained to him the situation, and he agreed that this is not how this works. He was super respectful to both my mom and the owner, and great at de-escalating the situation. The woman said my mom walked in and just tried taking the dresses off the rack, to which my mom adamantly disagreed, saying, no, we explained it to her, it's too expensive, and we just want our dresses back. There was no contract signed, no work had been done, and we weren't even supposed to pick up my dress until 2 weeks before my wedding. The owner continued to argue with the police officer, saying, that's not how this works. The officer refused that answer. He said, give these women their dresses back. This is not your property. Did I forget to mention that when my mom was in the store and I was calling the police, the woman told my mom that they were her dresses now, after the fact that we had already paid her? The owner finally tried to tell us that we were going to have a $1,450 store credit. Yeah, right. My mother told her that was not an option and she would be speaking with her credit card company just to cancel this charge since no service was done. My mom eventually called her credit card company and had them cancel the whole card since the woman told my mom in front of the police officer, "I have your banking information." We watched her take the pins and all the other things out of our dresses in front of us. The best part was that while we were in the lobby having a confrontation with this woman and the police officer, an older man walked in saying he had a pickup, and this woman's attitude does a 180. She gave him his clothes and asked him if he wanted a receipt. He said no and quickly got out of there, sensing the tension. We got our dresses and walked out of there with the police officer. We thanked him for coming out and kind of laughed that this is what he had to do on his day of work. He told us that his partner had been there a week prior for the exact same incident. The owner was holding someone else's dresses for ransom and wouldn't give them back. How thankful I am to have had that feeling and to tell my mother that something wasn't right. And based on this woman's reaction, I'd say so. This is where I have to thank you. Without you both being such strong, encouraging, boss-ass women, I wouldn't have listened to my intuition. I would have just been polite, and I would have just prayed that nothing turned out wrong. I'm so glad that I thought Heather would go back and say something with her legal mind, and Christy with her cool aunt fuck you attitude. You don't come off aggressive, you're just a rock star. My mom and I went to lunch after and had a lot of wine to decompress. I almost threw up from the anxiety, and of course, of all days, I didn't take my anxiety medication because I thought it was going to be a fabulous day. We agreed we learned a lesson, to listen to our guts and to say something then and there instead of waiting it out. I even told my mother that I felt this way, and I'm so glad I did, from listening to your podcast. I already reached out to my bridal salon and asked for their tailor's information. She has great reviews on everything and even has my grandma's middle name. While I was driving to the store, I asked my grandma for a sign that if the other tailor was right or not. This new one having my grandma's middle name already makes me feel 1,000 times better. So thank you both for saving my wedding dress from who knows what, from my mom being scammed, and from a possible mental breakdown. Much love, Mary Catherine. Hard relate.
Well, Mary Catherine, first of all, congratulations.
Yes!
Getting married in Ireland sounds like a dream.
That's
going to be beautiful, as are you and your dress. And thank you so much for your kind words. I recently, on a live stream, went off about how I worried people think I'm aggressive. So I appreciate that. The reassurance there. But Christ on a cracker. I can't imagine this, the gall of this lady.
To push Saint, first of all,
never
leave Saint Susan out of this. Like, you cannot like body slam a woman who's trying to get her shit and be like, I'm just going to get my dress. No, you're not. And like elbow check her. Like, are you crazy? Saint Susan.
That's crazy.
Saint Susan ain't going to take that, Susan. And she'd get her shit back. Also, the cops are like, God damn it. We got to go back to Marsha's bridal store again. Fuck.
Yeah.
She's probably stealing somebody else's dress.
Damn. Well, Mary Catherine included some screenshots of some Yelp reviews from this store if we would like to read them.
Oh, they are. Let's just go over the one. Bad customer service. She messed up the dress we bring. Okay. And her reasoning was that the dress was trash. What? 16 days ago?
Oh, one star. Also, and then it just ends when in reality, her face is built, ... But it's a screenshot. I got to know what they said.
Well, now we'll never know.
Oh.
Yeah, overpriced. It says, run, don't walk away from this business. Horrific services. Hold your dress hostage for a month. Takes your money. I don't know how she has any business. She ruins weddings. Arrogant. Gosh. Unskilled. Unprofessional. Destroyed my dress. Messed up my dress. Oh, totally unprofessional, destroyed my clothes, didn't ask me. And then the owner responded and was like, she's not being truthful. I trust myself. I do not fear such people.
Gosh. $1,450 for just hemming and taking a few things in is crazy. That's insane.
Unless you were like, oh, it's hand beaded with crystals and she's going to have to unbead every crystal and bead them. But if it's just like kind of a general, like my wedding dress didn't have like any beading or anything on it, but I totally relate, Mary Catherine. I had my wedding dress ruined and I had to get a new wedding dress 2 weeks before my wedding and they did not have my size. Then I had to get a bigger one and then take it to a different seamstress and have them alter. So that was a very good experience once I finally found the good alterations place. But like you said, what would Heather do? At the time, I was like, am I crazy? Mostly, I was just like, I really don't have an eye for detail, so I might be crazy, but I think that this looks bad. And if I think it looks bad, so then I called in two of my best friends who have the best taste and the best eyes, which is Christy and my friend Megan, my work wife from the big law firm who lives in San Fran now. And I was like, can y'all come up here? Because I think this is weird. And they're like, well, if you think it's weird. And you were perfect. And exactly what you said. It wasn't like you come up there and we're like, I'm going to fist fight everyone in here. But I was like, I need some backup. Like, am I crazy? And you're like, yeah, no, we're not going to do this.
I'm like, it was definitely messed up.
She called a lawyer and a judge.
Snagged it. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. The lady had snagged it and gotten what looked like makeup on it too. Yes. So, yeah, it's such a weird situation when you're in doing a retail thing like this, because you're like, you feel like you're over a barrel.
Yeah.
Especially when it's something like your wedding dress. You're like, well, I don't want to be doing this, but I'm also in a time crunch and people book so far out for stuff mm-hmm. like this. But You said yourself, you learned that day to trust your gut, and I think that's a good lesson to take away from it. And it sounds like your mom, too. Y'all both had a bad feeling, and it was very warranted, judging by these Yelp reviews.
No, for sure, especially because it sounds like she's going to fight you and, quote, I do not fear you. Like, she's a
Golly.
Fearless monster who's going to fight you.
It's so embarrassing when people respond to comments, too, and in a way like this. There's a right way to respond and take responsibility, and this is not
or even disagree in a certain way of, like, you know, whatever, but being like, you are lying and I will fight you. It's like, what is this? Well, you did the right thing and going back early. And it's one of those where you're like, I'm not off base here, because like there's 1,000 reviews that are the same.
Yeah.
And that's what the magic of reviews do for all of us. So thanks. Shout out to everyone who leaves reviews, because we can't read them if you don't leave them.
No, thank you to everybody that's left us a review.
Oh, true. Thank you very much. Yeah.
You know, you're never going to see us replying to a 1-star with clapping back. But, you know, that doesn't look good on anybody.
No, I mean, what am I going to say, really? I'm always just like, okay, that's cool. I don't ever leave bad reviews.
I don't read the reviews, so I don't even know if I should reply to anybody.
No, truly not. I don't read our reviews, but as far as me leaving reviews, it's almost like, well, that lady only leaves 5-star reviews. I'm like, that's true, because I really only leave reviews when everything's great and I've had a good time. If I have a bad time, I just would like be a grown-up adult and talk to a person about it. And then if they won't talk, like, settle it, then you got to go and leave the negative reviews. And so it sounds
like you do, because it shows, especially with the wedding dress thing. Like, I look at those too, and people, if I, you know, unfortunately, seems like she manipulated the system to get a good score on Google, which is what St. Susan saw. But then over on Yelp, it was a different story. But yeah, I find them very helpful. Mm-hmm. So thank you to everybody that leaves them, because rarely do I leave them either, but I certainly do read a ton of them.
I know. I'm trying to get better, especially when we're on the road, and especially when we stop, you know, when we're on tour and we stop at like a family restaurant, a small business, a small cafe, a small boutique. It's like, that might help somebody else who's traveling, and also maybe help the shop owner. So I'm glad you got out of there, Mary Catherine. And please send us wedding photos from Ireland.
Yeah. Love to see the dress too.
Yeah, please.
Well, thank you so much to everyone for sending in your Freaky Friday stories. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. If you like our free episodes, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free just to see what we're up to next, or dive in over 900 hours of bonus content like True Crime Headlines, Judge Christie, Heather's Saves, Dear Sinister. We got all sorts of stuff up there.
Oh, yes, and more to come. Not to mention, we also have a free trial. So if you're like, I want to hear that one Judge Christie bit that they were talking about, or I want to go watch that live stream where they're designing Heather's outfit from the October live show, you can do a free trial where you join for free at any level, check out the perks for a week, and cancel anytime before the free trial is over without getting charged. You can also just join for free, and that's where you just kind of are on an email list. But it's different than an email list because you get something with it. So if you just do the join for free, it's $0. Plug your info in, and you can go listen to the back catalog of the public audio bonuses that we've made public for our free listeners, as well as once a month, you'll get a new one. So that's a fun thing if you're just like, mm-hmm. I want to know what y'all are up to. I'm not sure if I want to commit. That's okay, baby. Dip your toe
we
in.
We get it.
Welcome.
We get it.
Welcome.
Dip your toe in.
Yeah. Now, also, don't forget to head over to Sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out Sinisterhood merch, like t-shirts, mugs, like this wonderful So What Do We Think mug I'm drinking my coffee out of today. We also have totes, stickers, clothes for your kiddos. Our Believe and Be Kind design is the current fave of everyone, designed by Ella, featuring the wonderful Flatwoods Monster. And don't forget, we have clearance merch. And if you're a Patreon member at the Ruling the Airwaves Getting Into It tier, make sure you use your Patreon discount when you buy anything or the secret Patreon store or even shopping clearance. It works on all of it.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show, follow us on socials, and check out the episode description. You'll also find fun things like topic-based playlists and links to all those live show tickets for the Full Moon Energy Tour.
You can follow us on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. You can watch video versions of our Wednesday episodes early and ad-free on Patreon, or they drop a few days later on YouTube, as well as some clips on YouTube from Freaky Friday. We've got live stream replays from when we've just streamed on YouTube randomly, and we'll have some clips from our Q&As on there as well. And head over to cameo.com to order a deranged cameo for yourself. McGruff recently cucked someone. Cornskull dance. I still haven't done Horsehead Ladybody. You know what? Shout out to Quinn for making me those bracelets that said Horsehead yes. Ladybody. That's like the closest to my dream coming true. And I even put it in my May photo dump on Instagram because I loved it so much.
Nice.
But speaking of, so order your own cameo over at cameo.com and search Sinisterhood. Speaking of photo dumps, where can folks find you on the World Wide Web, Christy Wallace?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm on the internet at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
Sinister.